Feels kind of weird. I left my Bible at home today. And so I just came up here with this little piece of paper. I don't feel like authentic or something. I don't know. But I'll just say, I don't usually read my Bible when I'm up here. I put the verses I'm going to read, they're in my notes. But I pretend that I'm reading from the Bible every week. So there's really not going to be any difference. But if you struggle with me not having a Bible, I'm sorry. I just forgot. Last week, I introduced our theme for the year, which is awake. We read from Ephesians chapter 5. I'm going to read that verse again. Ephesians 5, 8 through 14. It says, "For once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light, for the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to mention what such people do secretly. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, 'Sleeper, awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.'" We talked about the fact that God's work in us, God's work of saving us, is not so much, I was a really bad person, but then I got saved, and now I'm a really good person. But it's more accurate to say, no, I was blind, but now I see. God has moved in me, has worked in me, and has opened my eyes to a whole different way of doing life, a new possibility for who I am. In fact, God has brought me to life. I'm a part of God's ongoing work of creation. Just like in the beginning, when God said, "Let there be light," there was light. And now in us, in Jesus, those of us who were darkness, he looks at us and says, "Let there be light," and we are light. So we no longer walk around like sleepwalking. We're awake to the spiritual life. And I want to talk here just right in the beginning of the sermon this week to talk about what it means to live as children of light. You know, it says there in verse 8, "You were once darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light." You know, what does that mean? And of course, I'm not going to say everything that could be said about that, but I want to talk a little bit, particularly as it pertains to our thought life, about what it means to live as children of light. You know, 1 John 1, verse 5 says, "God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all." So a part of being a child of light is that God has birthed us again. And we are now a child of the light. Light is our parent. And so the nature of light has been passed on to us as all parents pass on their nature to their children. We're not perfect, and we don't live in a perfect world, but we are changed. And the difference in the children of light is not a pose that we strike in certain situations to try to look right. It's not even primarily the things that we do or don't do, although our behavior changes significantly. But where the children of light are different is primarily and most importantly on the inside, in their inner life, in the depths of their soul. And just so you know, when I say soul, what I mean is kind of the command center of our being. The soul is the thing that kind of integrates and controls all the different aspects of us. And we can't really break ourselves up into these different things like our thought life, our emotional life, our physical life, our social life, our spirit. You know, we're whole beings, but sometimes it's helpful to think about these different aspects of ourself. Our will is another thing, the things that we decide and that we determine to do. Our will is another aspect. But when we talk about living as children of light, it says something about who we are. And then our actions flow from that. And I want to do a little exercise. And I want to just spend a little time describing the thought life of a child of light. And you can just sit back and relax. Not that you would necessarily be doing anything else right now. I hope you're not like tense, that I don't put you on edge. But just you can relax. And I want you to just to think about this description of the thought life of the children of light. And to practice this discipline of listening for God. And I really believe that is, that's the essence of what we sometimes call quiet times, is that you're listening for God. You know, and I've had different teachings and different thoughts over the years about what a quiet time actually is. And early on, it involved, I've got my Bible out, I've got my notebook, I'm taking copious notes, and I'm writing questions. And you could tell if you had a really, really great quiet time if you left that time feeling completely shredded and beat down. I had the most awesome quiet time. I am such a sinful wretch. Amen, bro. A quiet time is really where you quiet yourself, and you might be reading the Bible, you might be praying, you might be meditating on the scripture, you might be taking in the beauty of nature, but you're quieting your soul, this command center that kind of integrates your whole being, you're quieting it, and you're turning your thoughts, you're turning your whole being toward God, and you're listening. You're listening for words from God. And so I want you to do that while I talk about the thought life of a child of light. Most basically, the children of light think about God. God is never out of their minds and never far from their focus. They love to dwell on the goodness and power and beauty and grace of God, especially as brought to life in Jesus of Nazareth. They adore God as revealed in the Bible, in nature, in history, in the stories of great people, and in the church. They don't dwell on darkness. They don't dwell on evil. It's not a big thing in their thoughts. Of course, they come in contact with darkness in the broken world, and they deal with it appropriately when they encounter it, but they don't center their thoughts on what not to do or what not to think about. They're confident that the darkness has been defeated. They understand its emptiness. And because their thoughts are focused on God, all other good things are welcome in their thoughts as well. As Paul says in Philippians 4, 8 and 9, whatever is true and noble and right and pure and excellent and praiseworthy, dwell on those things. I think that's enough for us to bite off for one day. Just that idea that in the thought life of a child of light, we do not dwell on darkness. It's not a big thing in our thought life. We choose to think about what is good and right and true and noble and praiseworthy and excellent. I'm not focused. In fact, it's It's completely self-defeating to be focused in on what I will not think about. Right? You can't do that. It's equally unfruitful to think about what I will not do. It doesn't work. Romans 12, 1 and 2 says, don't conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Where God changes us, where God makes us new, starts in our minds. In our minds is the area of our lives where we have the most freedom. And that is what we choose to focus on. And children of light have chosen not to dwell on darkness. Last Sunday was January 10th. It would have been my dad's 100th birthday. I'm next to the youngest of nine kids, and I just turned 55. My dad was almost 45 when I was born. And so January 10th, 2016 was, 100 years since January 10th, 1916, when he was born. He passed away in 1995 at 79 years of age, and I miss him, and I'm proud to be his son. But I posted on Facebook last week my favorite picture of him. It was from May of 1938. It was just a few days. It was right at the end of May. It was on the day of my mom's high school address. My mom was valedictorian of her high school class, and she was giving the baccalaureate address to the student body. And my dad, she was 18 years old. My dad was 22, and he was there at the baccalaureate address waiting for her to finish with all that high school nonsense so they could get married like 5 days later. And they got married on June 4th, 1938. I love that picture of him. He looks so happy. But some of my, one of my siblings, one of my sisters reposted it, and then a couple of my cousins did, and the post started spreading, and then Facebook does what Facebook does, and that is it connects you with people from your past, whether you want to be connected with them or not. And as I was looking at all the comments and the comments on the reposts on my sister's Facebook page, I saw this comment, and then I just somehow found myself on the Facebook page of a girl, a woman now, that we... I went to church together when I was, the church we started going to when I was in fifth grade. And when I was in elementary school, she was in high school. She was like a senior in high school. And, you may not remember this, but I do. It's like when you're in fifth grade, high school students are straight up adults. They're like moms and dads, except cool. And so I have these memories of this girl. She was one of the elders of the church. It was her daughter, and she had the strawberry blonde hair. She was funny, and she would pay attention to me, and thought I was a cute little kid, And but that's kind of like a kitten that's cute when they're little, and then they grow up. But I haven't had any contact with her in decades. But it turns out her mom passed away in 2014, and she had a post on her Facebook page that I was reading. And she was talking about her mom, and she said that her mom worked tirelessly her entire life to reach her eternal resting place with her Heavenly Father and with her grandparents, with this woman's grandparents. And she said, "I try so hard to be like Mama, but I fall so short many times. I know if I can just be like her, I will join them all some glorious day. I can't take the chance of not being there. I pray for myself to be stronger and not to sin and to be more aware of the example I must set as a Christian. And I was reading that and I felt this sadness come over me. And I thought, what a terrible outlook. That was my gut reaction, was like, ooh, that's kind of heartbreaking. And then my next thought right after that was, oh yeah, I remember thinking like that. I remember thinking, I'm not good enough. I can't do it. I got to work harder. If I want to get to heaven, man, I got to get on this stick. I got to work and work and work. I got to work tirelessly like her mom did to make it to my eternal home. I want to go to heaven, but I don't think I'm going to. And I'm not saying this at all to poke fun of her or to condemn that way of thinking. She's doing fine condemning herself without my help. But it struck me as I was thinking, as I've been thinking about the thought life of children of light, and I was thinking, what a stark contrast to the way I was actually taught to think, because this woman and I learned it in the same place, church. What we learned is that if you want to get to heaven, you're probably not going to make it, but if you have any shot, you better really focus in on your sin. And you better work and work and work and work and hope against all hope that somehow you can make it to heaven where Mama and Grandma are. Can you imagine the tragedy of not making it to where they are? Like that's going to be the best thing in heaven or something. Rather than good news, that sounds like slavery. It sounds like fear. It sounds like guilt. It sounds like judgment, condemnation. And I'm not at all questioning her motives. And I know where she got that thinking, because I got it too. We got it from church. We just didn't get it from Jesus. We were somehow taught that we should dwell on the darkness. If you're really spiritual, you'll dwell on all the ways that you mess up so you can really try harder not to do it next time. If you're not at least a little bit scared of going to hell, then you're not taking this whole thing seriously. But listen to this passage that describes the work that Jesus came to do. Since the children have flesh and blood, this is Hebrews 2, 14 and 15. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Jesus came to destroy death and to free those, to liberate those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. A part of the good news that you need to hear this morning is that Jesus came to free you from dwelling on the darkness. The darkness is not supposed to be a big deal to children of light. We focus on all that is right and good and true. And we're focused on being light. We're blessed to be a blessing. We've been made light to shine in dark places. The passage in Ephesians 5 says, "Have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, rather expose them." You, God said in you, let there be light, and there was light. And he made you to shine in this dark world. He made you to make a difference. You know, light makes a difference in the darkness. A good friend of mine who doesn't like to be mentioned from the pulpit posted this on Facebook. This is a quote by a woman named Marianne Williamson. I first heard it on the movie Aquila and the Bee, which is awesome. I'll read part of the quote. It says, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." I don't know who Marianne Williamson is, but what she said there is so much in line with the scriptures that we're looking at today. There may be some of you here today that totally relate to what this friend from my past and the ways that she thinks and what I've confessed, that I grew up thinking that way. That you live in fear. You live in condemnation. You live feeling judgment from God. The good news for you, what I want you to hear, is Jesus came to free you from that. You got that kind of thinking from somewhere, but you did not get it from Jesus. And Jesus wants to transform you by the renewing of your mind. He wants your mind focused. He wants you to choose, as a matter of will, for you to choose to focus your thoughts on the light and not on the dark. It doesn't work to think about what you're not going to think about. It doesn't work to think about all the things you're not going to do. Being a child of light means you're focused on whatever is good and right and true and noble and excellent and praiseworthy. And you set out intentionally to shine your light, the light that God has given you, to shine your light into the dark places around you. As the passage said, have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. When light shines in a dark place, it exposes stuff. And, we spent a good bit of time at the end of 2015 focused on proclaiming good news or gospeling the gospel. And, don't you think 2016 is a good time to start doing it? It's time to start shining some light in dark places. Shining your light. You were made to be a light. You are a part of God's ongoing work of creation. God is still saying, let there be light. And there is light. You know, exposing the unfruitful works of darkness is not necessarily putting your finger in somebody's face. In fact, if you show up in the world as a light in dark places, if you try to do it the way Jesus did, it never involves condemnation and self-righteousness toward other people. But there's just no ignoring how powerful light is. What a contrast light is in dark places. I think we underestimate how powerful it is to not gossip when everybody around you is gossiping. We forget, or we underestimate, or we just haven't thought about how powerful it is to be loving and accepting in a world that's judgmental and condemning and racist. We lose sight of how impacting it is to be children of light in the darkness around us. Of how different, how crazy different it is not to be selfish. We look at Jesus, you know, there are times to turn over tables. There are times to call out injustice. Jesus turned over the money changers' tables in the temple, and he said, this place was supposed to be a house of prayer for all the nations. All the nations was their way of saying the Gentiles. It means everybody besides our little group. The outer courts of the temple were supposed to be a house of prayer for all the nations. And these people had gone and they set up a market. They said, we've still got our inner courts where we can go and we can worship, so we're good. But this other place out there that was designed to bring people in who didn't know God, who didn't have the heritage, who didn't have the history and the legacy with God that they did, it was designed for that. They turned it into a marketplace, and they were driving people away by their arrogance and their hypocrisy and just their uncaring hearts. And Jesus said, it's enough. This has to stop. There is a time for that. But exposing the unfruitful works of darkness doesn't always look like that. I love the story in John 8 of the woman who was taken in the act of adultery. And they brought her to Jesus and says, the law of Moses says that she should be stoned. What do you say? And they're just saying it to test Jesus. And Jesus doesn't do away with the law. He just says, yeah, that is what the law says. So, yeah, let's do it. Let's stone her. And the one of you who's without sin, cast the first stone, and then we'll do this thing. And it says they all walked away. The older ones first. They got it quicker. Come on, gray hairs. And then the younger ones. And finally, they all wander off, and Jesus is left there with this woman who's been humiliated. But the truth is, just the unfeeling callousness of the people who drug her there far outshadowed her moral failure. But Jesus turns to her and says, where are those people who are condemning you? And she said, I guess I don't have any condemners. He said, neither do I condemn you, but go and leave your life of sin. Leave the darkness. Come into the light. But what Jesus did for the people who drugged this woman up to her, were making this spectacle, he didn't put his finger in their face. Really, what he did that was earth-shatteringly impactful to them is he politely and firmly refused to participate in their hypocrisy. Maybe sometimes there is a time to turn over the tables. There is a time to point out injustice or whatever kind of darkness is going on around us. Sometimes, really, all it takes is just politely but firmly refusing to participate in the darkness that's going on around you. Back in when we lived in Detroit, I worked for a few years at this place. I was a graphic designer for 15 years before I went in the ministry. And I worked for a company, and right before Christmas one year, Merry Christmas, you lost your job. And so I went in to meet with the owner of the company, and I was going on unemployment. I was looking for another job. This was right before I started my own graphic design business. I didn't know what I was going to do. But he said, I tell you what, go on unemployment, but then you can come in every day and work, and I'll just pay you cash under the table. I said, oh, no thanks. He said, what? No, you do it. Honestly, David, there's no way that anybody will ever find out. I said, that's kind of really beside the point, isn't it? He said, well, that's just a choice you'll have to make. And I said, well, it's already made. And I'm not saying that, I'm not telling this story to pat myself on the back, but on something that I saw in terms of just honesty and integrity, of just, I didn't put my finger in his face. It was definitely very awkward because I knew it was a small company, only 5 employees, and I knew he had already offered that same deal to the other people who got laid off, and they had all taken it. And I just will never forget the look on his face. And the look on his face, what that is light shining into a dark place. And I didn't see it as any big heroic thing. But I think all of us, it doesn't take big heroic things to be a light. Sometimes it can even be politely but firmly refusing to participate in the hatred, the gossip, the complaining. You go down the list, there's darkness all around us, and God in you and in me has said, let there be light, and there is light. But we're made light in order to be a light. For once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light. You have been set free from your minds dwelling on the darkness. Let's choose today to focus our minds and our thought life on what is good and right and true and noble and excellent and praiseworthy. That's what God calls us to dwell on. And let's practice the discipline of listening for God, of letting God show us the places that He wants our light to shine, the dark places all around us. God has made us light to make a difference in this dark world. Let's go to God in prayer.